Hello and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on gogo.com. My name is Neil Potter, and in this show, we're going to discuss common questions. To learn more about me and my background, be sure to check out my GoGo profile. If you have any questions you'd like to ask, please use the question and comment box below. So, common questions, I've narrowed it down to three common ones for this radio show. The first one is how to use Agile and inspection. Second one, whether we should have a paraphraser or not in inspection. Some of the common processes out there for inspection or peer reviews are referred to and use a paraphraser. And then what results do teams usually get when they start out? So to begin with, Agile and inspection. Now, if you are doing software development, you may be familiar with the Agile approach to doing software. And typically the focus of Agile is to have small incremental pieces being built in software and then have those tested and deployed in increments over time. So when work is listed out, for example, a list of functionality or requirements to go build, the idea is that that becomes a backlog of requirements, a log of work to be done. And then as the team does their sprint planning activity, they add estimates to the work and they decide what work can be complete in the sprint. And the sprint could be typically 1 to 4 weeks in duration. So a very incremental focus on doing software work. So after the review has occurred on the backlog of requirements and they've done estimates, then they can decide in sprint planning which requirements, which user stories, or functionality will be built in which sprint, typically a 4 week duration, and then they can decide how many sprints are required for the release to be complete. So maybe there's 5 or 6 sprints, each one is 4 weeks, and then they can decide, you know, the order the work actually occurs in. Now, by the end of a sprint, the idea is they can demonstrate the work and show progress. So they get early feedback after each sprint on what they have done and the mistakes and issues to go repair. So in the sprint definition, the common one, there's typically a life cycle defined for the steps they typically would go through to do a sprint. So after sprint planning, when they estimate and schedule the work, then there's probably a design phase and obviously coding or construction implementation phase, and then test or test planning, and then testing itself, a verification step. So every sprint has a similar look and feel to take work in from the backlog, go through a sprint planning activity, the design implementation test, test planning and testing activity, and a final demonstration. There's a lessons learned activity at the end, and they go back into the next sprint. So part of the goal of the Scrum and the sprint is to demonstrate that the functionality or the component complete at the end of that sprint is actually worthwhile and meets a requirement at the very beginning. So one thing you could do is add inspection as a way to help verify that. So if I'm going to go through some test planning and testing activities at the end of a sprint, I could also add in a code inspection to check out the code before the testing occurs. If the testing is going to take 2 or 3 days to complete, then I could do a code inspection with my colleagues of the code to clean up the code before spending too much time in the testing activity. I could also inspect or peer review other artifacts that come out of the sprint. Maybe there's a design document or an architecture document, a test plan or test cases, and they could be reviewed also for defects. So a couple of choices. I could wait till the very end of the sprint and then allocate a couple of days to inspect and rework the artifacts that have been created. So for example, I could treat the code as the low-level document and treat the other artifacts as the high-level document. Maybe there's a user story or a requirement defined. There could be an architecture diagram. There could be test cases. I could use all that as the high-level reference point and then understand if the code is meeting that objective. And then after fixing the code up from the inspection defects, I could then run the verification testing and prove that it actually met those exit criteria defined in test planning. And by doing that, I can speed up the defect identification activities on that one sprint. So in code review, in Scrum, they usually refer to people doing code reviews as a good practice. So all we're doing here is using inspection as defined as that code review activity, but also realizing it could be applied to any kind of artifact before the coding phase itself. Now, one other option to use inspection in Scrum is to look at the backlog. There is an example of a backlog used in most Scrum definitions. The backlog is a requirements listing and may have different levels of detail from a one-liner of what the user actually wants to a more detailed spec for that particular functionality. If there's a long backlog or long spec or long listing of things to go work on, we could actually apply inspection or peer review to that document to begin with. So if you keep in mind the whole purpose of sprints and Scrum is to maintain momentum, you wouldn't want to get into the fourth sprint at the fourth, 4-week duration block and then find there's some major requirements issues that have never been investigated beforehand. So you could decide to take the backlog in its current state, and it's going to change over time, and then do an initial inspection of it just to clean it up before we start doing the Scrum activities. And then as things get added to the backlog, new requirements or changes, they could either be informally reviewed if they're very small, or you may decide if there's a significant change in the backlog, there's a new inspection performed on either the changes or the new set of requirements. So that's one example of using inspection and Scrum together. It's to basically verify the output of each major sprint as an input to the next sprint. The second question is on paraphrasing or not. So there are some inspection processes out there that basically recommend a paraphraser exists on the team. So one of the inspectors, his or her job would be to look at the document, and in front of the team members in the inspection, instead of just logging defects, their job would be to paraphrase what they see. So for example, if I was a paraphraser and we're doing a design document, then before we log defects on that page, I would try to paraphrase or summarize what I believe that page of design was doing. While we're doing a code inspection, my job would be to paraphrase that area of the code base. So by paraphrasing or summarizing it, then as inspectors, you could understand it maybe a little bit better and then find defects in the low-level document. Now, paraphrasing is kind of tough because you have to find somebody that understands the artifact well enough to better paraphrase, and they have enough paraphrasing skills to be able to summarize concisely the document section. And that is very hard to find somebody that understands the document that thoroughly, more than the author, and also is able to paraphrase and summarize what they see without slowing the whole thing down. So our take on the world is that this can make the inspection very inefficient and cause much more confusion by a bad paraphraser giving bad summaries of the document they're looking at. And then the inspectors having to both read the document and listen to the paraphraser try to summarize the work. So what we do is basically have the high-level document, which is the document they can read beforehand to understand the low-level document. Typically, it existed at the beginning, even before the low-level was derived, like a requirement spec before a piece of code or a user story before the code being implemented, or a testing plan being done after a spec or a user story is defined. So that high-level document is basically what they use to understand the low-level document. And then secondly, in the preparation activity, they're looking through the documents looking for defects, and that's where they become up to speed in terms of understanding what they're looking at and then deriving questions if they want to ask the author questions. So we basically eliminate or don't even have a paraphraser because it's typically very cumbersome and can slow the whole thing down. And we replace that by a good preparation activity, the use of the high-level document, and the use of the idea of logging questions when there are questions derived by the inspectors. And so by doing that, we can avoid the slowness or the extra time required to paraphrase and understand and question the paraphrasing of the document. If the paraphraser gets it wrong, then you're going to have to sit there and debate exactly what did it mean and whether the document was correct and the paraphrase was wrong, or vice versa. Again, that can cause more confusion and frustration than just reading the document and then logging defects and or questions. The third question we'll discuss in this radio show is, what results do teams usually get when they inspect? And so I'm going to refer to some text in one of our newsletters, because this is a write-up of some early data out of a team when they first do inspection. So if you wanted to follow along, you're welcome to, or just listen to the radio show part of it. I'll describe what I've written down. This is the September 1999 issue of our newsletter. So if you go to processgroup.com, and then you look on the left-hand side, there's a newsletter link that refers to all of our pages, of our web pages of our newsletter. Most of them are in PDF format. If you look at that in September 1999, on the very front cover, you will find a little article that summarizes some of the data. So I'm going to go through that right now, whether you have the document in front of you or not. So what I did is I took some initial inspection numbers from some early inspections in the class, and then basically summarized those over time to see what people were finding. Now, in our class, when we do it, these are not academic documents. These are documents that are brought in by the students for the purpose to inspect and find defects in. So they're bringing in real code, real designs, requirement specs, plans, etc. And we're looking at that data and then logging the defects on the regular work that they do in their normal day-to-day operation. So the first bullet point, or first summary point, is about code and how many defects people typically find when they first inspect code. And so what we found is that on average, they were finding 37 critical or major, or severity 1 or severity 2, defects per 1,000 lines of code. So maybe they had a 400-line code segment in the inspection, so we're basically reconverting that into a per 1,000 lines of code to make it normalized. But they found 37 critical or major defects per 1,000 lines of code. Now, that is a pretty high number of defects, and those defects would cause the program to fail in testing and the field when it's going to go down to the end user. So a pretty high number. And these are early on inspections when the code has not been thoroughly tested yet. It may have been through some review or some testing, but not thoroughly, and therefore we're catching defects before a major user system test. The second one, this is 3.3 critical or major defects per effort hour expended in the inspection process. And compared to testing, so inspection, we found every effort hour expended 3.3 critical or major defects. So again, we're eliminating out of the calculation minors and trivial defects. And then in comparison to that, if we look at testing, students found 0.3 or a third defects per effort hour expended in test. So every hour that goes by, every effort hour that goes by in test, they were finding a third of a defect. So 3 hours per defect in test. So in the inspections they were doing at the very outset, they were finding 10 times more defects than they had found in test. Now, we're not going to eliminate tests because we need to do tests, because that really proves that the system either works or does not. But to find all the defects in test at the rate of 0.3 per effort hour is obviously a lot slower than if we had found quite a few of those at a faster rate through a code inspection. The next one we found is four critical or major defects per page for designs, plans, and specifications or requirements documents. So any artifact that was not code when people first inspected those in the class. So on average, four critical or major, or severity 1 or severity 2, defects per page for designs, plans, and specifications. And in most cases, these documents actually were or had been approved by their colleagues and management team. Actually, one of the things I do in the class is I always encourage people to bring in relevant documents that they're using now, but ones that have been actually approved before. Because when you can take existing approved documents and then find defects in them, that kind of shows you how good the approval phase was prior to this inspection. So 4 critical and major defects per page. That means by looking at one design document, or one specification, or one project plan, there are 4 major things per page that people were not catching beforehand, and then either believing because it was in the document, or maybe ignoring altogether that and other data because they didn't think the document was very credible. And that's a very high number of defects to allow through the flow of a project. If you just imagine that a designer is taking a requirement spec and believing, because they probably should, believe the specification or the requirements definition, but that requirements definition had 4 critical defects per page, that could cause all kinds of problems downstream because of the defect not being caught early enough and then being found late in the game. And then another one, when teams inspect code, 57% of them find, on average, between 6 and 12 defects per 1,000 lines of code, critical defects. These are severity 1 defects. These type of defects would cause the program to fail in test and in use. So when teams inspect code, 57% of them find, on average, between 6 and 12 critical defects per 1,000 lines of thousands of lines of code. Again, that's a pretty high number. And again, this would not be code that had been well tested or mature after over years of testing. This is code that could be either kind of new. This is code that would have not been tested thoroughly yet, but could be new or only a little bit tested in unit testing or component level testing, and then submitted to inspection. So when we looked at code inspection, many of the defects were of code either shipped or tested already. That was a problem. Again, not after 5 or 6 years, just initial testing, initial release. Critical defects we found included memory leaks. So basically the software does not keep account of the memory it has in its system, and therefore either leaks it out or doesn't return it back to the system for future use. Incorrect variable names, so people using the wrong variables and loops and conditions and calls. Logic errors, wrong path names given. For files, maybe it works on their particular machine, but not on a target or other machine. So these are difficult defects to find and test. These are ones that are hard to really kind of narrow down and isolate in the testing activity. So again, just a good rationale for inspecting some of the code beforehand to find these type of defects early that are much harder to find and more expensive to find later on. So I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. If you have any questions or comments, please use the question and comment box below. If you're interested in viewing my other shows, please just search for my archives, Neil Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R, on GoGo Radio. If there's a show you would like me to do, please send me an email and let me know. Thanks for your time today, and remember to tune in to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on gogo.com.